Cool. All right. So let's do this. Hello, Denim Heads, and welcome to the 11th Hangout with the Sons of Selvage. This is a podcast where a group of friends get together to talk about denim, menswear, and related interests. We aim for this to be a fun and inclusive podcast where you feel like you're hanging out with longtime friends. But please be warned, there's a bit of banter, cutting up, and explicit language. So in this episode, we'll have current interests, a bit of news, some Q&A, and then the discussion topic this time will be our unique styles. So kind of what's each of our unique approach to raw denim and menswear, et cetera. Obviously, please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Please follow us on Instagram at Sons of Selvage Podcast. And if you need to email us, we are sonsofselvagepodcast@gmail.com. Please give us a shout with any questions, ideas, feedback, etc. So on that note, I'm David.
I'm Andy.
I'm Ilya.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Lex.
And I'm Tom. Woo.
Thanks, everybody, for your introduction. Let's go ahead and jump into current interests.
Yeah, so some pretty exciting stuff since our last recording is that I have been able to find someone who could fix my first ever pair of raw denim. So I bought a pair of Eat Dust Fit 73 probably about 10 years ago now, in 2011. Yeah, it's almost 10 years ago now. And I still have them. They still fit. So that's obviously already a great start because that doesn't happen very often. So the pockets were completely blown out. I couldn't have anything in my pockets anymore. So I never really wore them that often because of that. But then this guy who's known on Instagram as just Denim Repair Service, he works out of the, it used to be called Godspeed Store down in Melbourne. It has been rebranded to Uhara now. So he works out of there. I just send him a few pictures of what the pockets look like because I wasn't sure if anyone was able to fix them. He just said, send them up and or send them down, I should say. And I'll have a look at it and give it a good old crack and see if we can bring them back to life. And he did. The pockets look absolutely amazing. There's a little bit of a print on the inside of the pocket, just with a little bit of a story on E-Dust and on the jeans and stuff. And he's even been able to save you all of that. So, amazing stuff. So I can wear them again now, which is awesome. It's been a bit of a, I think I've mentioned this before, but like finding stuff here in Australia, to repair your jeans and stuff like that is pretty hard. Cause there's not a lot of raw denim wares to start with. So not a huge market for it. So if you do live in Australia and you're listening to this and need some jeans fixed, send them up to or down to Denim Repair Service in Melbourne.
And did he do a full pocket bag replace or just replace the bottom half of it?
Yeah, just replacing the bottom half of it. Yeah, so there were a couple of points where there was holes not only in the bottom but also in the top. So he just patched everything up. But it looks amazing. They feel very solid. So hopefully they can go another 10 years. And then I'll send them back again.
Cool.
Yeah, so super happy.
You've done a really good job. They look beautiful.
Must feel nice to have them back in action again, Kevin.
Mm. Yeah, it's amazing. I was actually quite surprised that they still fit it, to be honest. They are
down, mate.
they are more like they're a regular fit, so which is something I normally don't really wear anymore these days. Because they are on the smaller side, they have come a little bit more snug, but they still fit. So, yeah, it's amazing. So I'm glad that I've still got them, and that I can wear them now again. So I'll bring them back more in a bit more in rotation after the Indigo Invitational Comp is finished in October. What about you, Ilya? What have you been up to?
Nothing too exciting. Current interests, I guess. I've been back on the vinyl flex a little bit. Maybe it's because I'm spending a little more time at home. You know, slower paced time. And yeah, I started to dig out some old jazz vinyls from the shops. Been going down to Brighton quite a few times, and the record stores down there are great. So yeah, I picked up some Miles Davis albums, some Coltrane albums. For whatever reason, I quite like listening to old music on vinyl, and versus listening to music on Spotify, say. Which I don't know whether that's something in my head or whether I feel like vinyl suits better for older music. But yeah, that's been kind of the recent kind of hobby I've been getting back into, I guess. Has anyone else got any vinyl that they've been listening to or getting?
I haven't bought any vinyl for a while. I've got a little stash. I'm looking at it right now, but what was the last thing? I think the last bit of vinyl I picked up was a couple of years ago, and that was Cult of Lunas. Oh, no. I'm talking absolute bollocks. No, my last thing was earlier this year. I still haven't had a chance to listen to it. Cult of Luna. So for people who don't know, that's a Swedish post-metal band that have been around probably like 20 years or something. They released this, if you can see it. You can't really see it on this. Okay, it's only showing my face. It's a 5-track kind of mini album called A Raging River. That's the last thing I got hold of. I've kind of not really been buying much music at the moment. A lot of stuff I'm getting is free because to do those reviews for Apathy and Exhaustion.
Yeah, I've never really gotten into vinyl for some reason. I don't know.
Remember, it can get very expensive.
I got my first turntables when I was like 18, kind of getting into like hip hop scratching and stuff, and then I had like two Gemini turntables in a mixer, and so I've got like all this really great old sort of like early 2000s sort of indie abstract hip hop on vinyl back in my parents' house. But when I moved to Europe, I didn't bring it with me. So every time I go home, I've got like all these great records, but I need to somehow find a way to get them back to the UK, but they're just so heavy and, you know, would cost so much to ship. It's a bit of a shame that I've got so much good stuff, like old Anticon records, you know, Living Legends, all kinds of good stuff back at my folks' place.
It'd be interesting to see how much value those kind of records retain. Because, you know, like jazz records from the 60s, 70s, they you know, they still cost quite a lot versus some other genres which you can pick up, you know, dog cheap. I know, like, CD-wise, a lot of that stuff has lost most of its value. Does death metal retain value in CDs and vinyl, Andy?
Yep. All metal does, especially if it's... I think it's like same with any kind of record. If you look at what pressing it was and any kind of like weird... If it was like a regional or national specific release, stuff like that, it goes for big money. I mean, I've got... it's not like mega books, but I've got one of... Envy's old release. So Envy are a Japanese hardcore band. They've probably been going as long as we've been alive. And I think I picked it up when I was like 21, and it cost me like $64 because it was out of print. What made matters worse is that I then went to a festival, and there was a store there where I picked up the CD for 13 quid. But vinyl always maintains its money, mate, regardless of the genre, I think.
Well, these days, cassette tapes are the big thing again, right? So, like, kind of indie bands going on Bandcamp and putting out cassette tapes of, like, limited releases or, like, mixes, that kind of stuff. So maybe in like, I don't know, 5-10 years time, CDs will become cool again.
Well, I hope so, because I've got like a big stash of them under my stairs.
That you want to get rid of against a good price.
I don't want to get rid of them for, you know, £1 or £2, but yeah, I wouldn't mind getting some good dosh for it.
I think even more impressive than the old records I have is I got into kind of indie hip hop when I was like in my teens as a skater. And I remember there was a website called ATAK, Hip Hop Distribution, like ATAK. And you used to be able to, I don't know where it was located, but it was like this one dude's website, and people would go on there and sell their like indie hip hop tape, cassette tapes. And so I've got like some crazy old timey kind of like dubbed at home indie hip hop tapes that I need to sort of find a way to. I started at one point kind of hooking them up to my mixer and like recording them as MP3s on my computer. So I've got some of them like transposed digitally, but it'd be cool to find like a Walkman. Remember those things and like go back and listen to those old tapes.
I'm sure you can pick one up, mate.
Yeah, true. And on that note, I guess. A bit of current interest is one that's probably for both Ilya and me, but that's a podcast called What Had Happened Was, which is a podcast by rapper and I think also poet Open Mike Eagle, where he basically spends a whole season talking about the history of a particular musician with that musician. And so the entirety of season one was basically him hanging out with Prince Paul. So they talked about, you know, the De La Soul days. Then they talked about Prince Paul's Psychoanalysis, which I absolutely love. And then Prince Among Thieves, which is sort of the first hip hop musical or hip hop opera album. And then into like Handsome Boy Modeling School and stuff, which I also really love. Now is absolutely an amazing, amazing podcast. Even just the little bits like Open Mike Eagle rapping what the podcast is about at the opening of the podcast. Like he kind of like freestyles the intro, which is super cool. And then I'm now listening to season two, which is with LP, who was, you know, part of Company Flow, did Def Jux Records, and then more recently has been in Run the Jewels with Killer Mike. That's amazing as well. Like Company Flow, their Fun Crusher Plus record was probably one of my favorite hip hop records growing up. And then also the production he did for Cannibal Ox. Again, one of my favorite hip hop records of all time. Ilya, how have you found that podcast?
Yeah, I'm a big fan. You know, I think I sent you the link when I heard the Prince Paul one. And I'm growing up as well. I was, you know, making hip hop beats, and Prince Paul was definitely a big inspiration for me because he was quite fluid in his styles and the sample choices that he would make. So it's really fascinating to hear him speak about how those albums were put together, the stories behind them. And yeah, with LP as well, it's quite interesting because LP's stoned most of the time and trying to remember what happened like 15 years ago. So it does make for some interesting listening. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the podcast. I think it's, if you're a hip hop fan, I think it's a must listen. And the other cool thing is that the guest for that season produces the beat for the intro song. Open Mike Eagle raps over. So yeah, it's really interesting concept for a podcast to have, you know, like a season long guest. And it'd be interesting to see that happening with other genres, I think.
Yeah, definitely. My wish list for future seasons of this specific podcast would be like
DJ Shadow.
DJ Shadow would be one. Like Cool Keith / Dr. Octagon would be another, and then Buck 65. Those three people have just kind of like weird enigmatic
histories. Unfortunately we won't get a MF Doom, but that would be one of my wish list.
Yeah, he'd be awesome. Yeah. So sad that he's gone. One more I'd add to that is Dean Blunt from London. He's just this super weird, super interesting kind of blues, R&B, rap musician, something or other, from used to be in Hype Williams. His new record came out yesterday, and it's really cool. indie hip hop. Ilya and I are both huge fans, and feel free to jump on our Discord and shoot, and we'll have like a hip hop channel or something. So
you can have a music channel. Share some of them. Maybe we should create a Spotify playlist that we can all add some music that we're into, and then we can kind of see, you know, what everyone is listening to and what inspires each other musically.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That'd be really cool. Anybody else have anything interesting?
Yeah, I've got a few bits. So I'll stick to kind of the non clothing theme at the moment. I just wrote a short story for the Eye of Terror zine, which will be coming out hopefully next month.
Nice.
So if people don't know, if I may, I keep saying that, but so Eye of Terror zine, it's a newsy kind of independent zine set up by a group called the Leeds War Council. They are a bunch of war gamers and RPG players and stuff, who are also kind of hardcore and punk fans. And so they just get people to submit stuff. So I thought I'd jump in on the second episode, the second issue, little short 2000 word story. We will see how it looks in print. I think they only usually release about 60 copies of each issue. So it is a tiny run, but it was nice just to kind of spread my creative writing wings and try something different. I don't think I've written a story since GCSE English. So it was nice just to try it out and kind of have a little play.
I love how in this sort of digital first world, the thing that seems to be sort of resonating best or sort of being most successful with these kind of like really niche indie publications. It feels like over time, the more niche something is, the more kind of momentum and sort of fandom it gets behind it, whether it's like board games, dungeon, D&D, sci-fi. I love seeing these kind of like really cool niche publications catch on.
Yeah, I think there's kind of a big thread where it's people who used to do it when they were kind of, you know, in their early teens, fell off the bandwagon because it wasn't cool. And, you know, the kind of pressures of trying to look good at school and fitting in, you kind of drop off a lot of the more obscure hobbies. If you don't, you know, fair play to you, but you often, you know, a lot of people who don't end up being maybe not the most socially adjusted individuals on the planet. So, yeah, and it's just people now kind of getting into their 30s. They've got a bit of income, you know, a bit of spare income. They're settled down. They don't really care what people think anymore. And I actually, I used to really enjoy that. Why don't we have a crack again? And then they've got their own mates who jump back in it. And it's quite interesting that it seems to be quite big in the punk scene, seems to be where it's coming from, which I thought would be quite surprising. You'd think it'd be more the extreme metal side. But yeah, there's a lot of hardcore kids who are doing it. And, there's a number of related podcasts linked to that. So yeah, it's nice to see this kind of stuff coming back up and being done, you know, with a bunch of adults who, to be honest, don't really give a fuck.
What's the story about? Are you allowed to tell, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's a short story about a police or police at proxy team clearing a building that's full of cultists, and it all going horribly wrong.
Nice.
Are they Jane Taylor cults?
Corpse Grinder, mate.
Oh, Corpse Grinder, lovely. I'm the only one here who understands what any of it means.
Basically, it gets very, very violent very, very quickly, and big, sharp axes are used.
Lex, what have you been up to? I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's been quite a busy month in kind of like general living stuff. So I've moved house. The house we're living in Southeast London sold. So I had to move out really quickly. So we're now staying at a friend's house in Peckham, which is quite nice, because I don't know if any of you guys know Peckham at all. It's an area I've not lived in before. It's quite cool to see a new bit of London. But also, my girlfriend and I have had an offer accepted on a house, so we'll be buying somewhere in Southeast London.
Ooh, as well. Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So, fingers crossed if it all goes through. So I will be, we've got a house, little cottage, if you can call it a cottage in Peckham, a little 1870s cottage in between Peckham and Nunhead. So for those who don't live in London, that's kind of Southeast London.
Southeast represents.
Yeah, yeah. Tom's a Southeast boy, so he knows. So that's kind of taken up our time, really. But it's all quite positive. And if all goes well, the plan is it's got a reasonably big garden. So I'm going to build a studio at the bottom of the garden and basically move all of my machines down there. So I no longer have to pay 300 quid a month in rent for my little studio. All still in Southeast. So we'll have Denim Land, Phil Denim Workshop. We'll all be located in one location, walking distance from my house, so I won't even have to fully get dressed to go to the studio. I can just go walk down the garden in my pants.
That's very cool.
Could you argue that Phil Denim would now be in a field if it's in your back garden?
I guess you could define a garden as a very small field. So it started off because I used to live right next to Weaver's Field, so I was calling it Weaver's Field Denim and then got lazy and just shortened it. So now I could rename it Garden Denim.
Shed Denim.
Shed. Do not call my future studio a shed, Tom.
Palace.
Exactly.
Denim.
It'll be palatial. Who hasn't done their interests yet?
Just me.
There we go, Tom. You jump in.
Not been up to a mess of much. It was my birthday last month. And I've got a nice Stevenson overall shirt. It's kind of one of the vent hole shirts. So it's got like the little vent holes under the armpits and around the back. And it's made with like the traditional Hawaiian fabric that's indigo checked kind of style. So it's beautiful stuff. Really, really beautiful fabric. And it's got the proper metal buttons and everything. Outside of that, I've been watching a series called Time, with Sean Bean and Stephen Marchant, I think his name is, off the top of my head. That's really good. Anything with that Stephen guy is just like, he's such a good actor. Really good series if you want to watch something pretty gritty and all about prisons and Sean Bean's like first time prisoner and his experience in there. He hasn't died yet, which is quite surprising. We're only about two episodes.
Don't spoil it for everyone. he dies.
Well, Sean Bean dies in everything. Like, every role he has, he dies. Except for Sharp, which I guess, like, that went on so long that he just cursed himself to die in everything. And then I built a massive tank, which I'll show you guys on there. He's a big boy.
Yeah, that is quite big.
Yeah. So that's been like my latest build thing. And then for United overalls, we've got a few pairs of jeans in a shop in Westrum in Kent called The Emporium. So that's quite exciting for people to be able to try them on and not just have a look at pictures online. It's beautiful, beautiful shop. And the guy there is really sound. So that's been quite exciting to be able to kind of have a physical store with products in. That's about it from me, really.
Well, also in the coming months, Tom and I will be working together to help develop a new cut for United overalls. So
nice.
I have all of your patterns. You'll be glad to know, Tom, are safely in my studio now. So yes. Hopefully I'll have a look at them in the next couple of weeks or so once the day job quietens down.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get some stuff hashed out. For United Overalls Part 2, Electric Boogaloo.
You'll have to share some details once you can, Tom, of how the jeans are going to look and fit and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. Once we kind of get it all hashed out, then I'm sure we could do an exclusive Sons of Selvage. Maybe.
On the clothing side, I wanted to kind of speak a bit about a recent acquisition. So if folks on Instagram, I posted a picture of some shorts I picked up from 316. if you remember a couple episodes back, I was ranting about how not enough companies make Bermuda shorts, which is basically like, I guess you can call it like a chino short or like a khaki short, but made in denim. So 316, it kind of missed my radar, but our friend Ricky flagged them to my attention, had made, I think they called it 5x5 drawstring short, which is why I never looked at them because I was like, I don't want a drawstring short. But what they actually were is basically a Bermuda short that just also happened to have a drawstring. And pretty cool, like double indigo, so indigo warp, indigo weft. Interestingly, it's a box weave, so I don't know if you can technically call it canvas, or sorry, if you can technically call it denim, or it should be called canvas instead, like indigo dyed canvas, just based on the weave. But got a pair for half off recently, and I'm absolutely in love with them. The fit's amazing, the texture, the fabric's amazing. So 316, please keep making your drawstring short in subsequent seasons, and please make them in black. Also should mention too, if folks are interested in denim Bermuda shorts, that Benzac Denim Developers came out with one as well, in a really nice, I think it's like a neppy denim or like a slubby denim, that looked really nice too. So I'm quite excited to see that companies are doing the Bermuda short thing. And make sure to check our Instagram so I can show you a picture of my Big John ones, which I bought in Amsterdam like 10 years ago from Tenue de Nîmes, compared to like the new 316 ones. So it's kind of a cool comparison of what you can do with a pair of denim Bermuda shorts over time.
I think Bermuda shorts are very last season. It's all about the scuba trunks now.
No, it's not. It's never going to be.
Always. Please will be. No.
Yeah, I feel like I need to change our theme song to that song from the 50s. You know, we wear short shorts. Like, it's like that really old timey song.
Yes.
Cool. Anybody else have any clothing acquisitions or any clothing based updates?
Yeah, I bought a load of shit.
Yeah, very mildly put. Yeah,
I thought your baby makes a load of shit for you. Why would you go buy it?
Don't even get started there, mate. It was kind of like a series of not particularly well. It was like a couple of non-planned purchases. Obviously, Ilya's spoken about this, mentioned the scuba trunks that we both effectively bullied each other into buying.
That's right.
And now love to bits. And I was actually on Instagram chatting with whoever runs the social media side of the Mr. Freedom store, and they loved the fact that we did it as effectively a very expensive joke and then turned out that we loved them. So that made their day. Imagine that they're not going to be the most popular item on their release, but yeah, if you want to have shorts that where if you sit down in a certain way your testicles might hang out, they're great. Just actually, yeah, just wear some trunks underneath. But yeah, they're pretty comfy, and quite lightweight, so quite nice in this weather. I just will never go to my son's nursery in them, and I'll never go shopping in them because I don't want to get arrested. So the other stuff was, it was my wife and I had our anniversary shortly after we recorded the last episode, our second mm-hmm. wedding anniversary. It's the cotton one. So we both got each other a couple of items. I got her a TSPTR sweater with Snoopy on it saying aloha, and then a sweater from a bee conservation thing because she's got a big thing with about bees, and it's supporting a good charity. And then she got me one of Mersey's tees, the one in the it's called Aqua. It's like a very light bluey grey. She's quite nice. And then this Buzz Rickson Snoopy tee that I'm wearing right now, which is their moon safety program tee. Which is pretty fun. And then we went out into town to celebrate. And I ended up walking into Son of a Stag and walking out with a pair of warehouse fatigue pants.
Of course he did.
I went in because I wanted to pick up the army green short sleeve Henley by Mers.
Yeah.
Which I did pick up. but as we were in there, my wife saw the trousers and she was like, what are those? They look quite nice. And I had a quick glance, and we kind of needed to get to where we're going, where we had a reservation. I was like, okay, yeah, they are nice, but I'll have a little think. And then we had a bit of spare time, so I went back and tried them on, and that was a silly decision for my wallet.
Yeah.
And that was it, and I walked out. And they're actually lovely. I mean, I wouldn't have parted with that money if they weren't, but it's quite nice because they're a wider leg than what I'm used to wearing and a higher waist. It's something that you would probably see out of all of us, Ilya more likely to wear than
big
myself.
Fan.
Yeah. Or, you know, looking at kind of outside our group, like Jake, almost vintage style, it's the kind of thing that he would wear, quite high-waisted, quite wide-legged. But yeah, they're really lightweight and they're a nice counterpoint to my Pike Brothers ones that are more tapered and a slightly heavier weight fabric. But yeah, I love them. That was my spending, and I'm still looking at the Mr. Freedom advisor jacket. More tiger stripe.
Okay.
Yeah, go, I remember we'll go nicely as a tux with the scuba trunks.
No.
Blend in.
No.
I'm just a pair of really tasty pegs running around the guard.
Just need some long socks in tiger stripe as well.
If you can find me a Swedish M90 pair of trunks, I may join you guys.
We could probably make a pair. Lex will do it. Just get him
make a pair.
Yeah, get a pair of M90 camo trousers and he'll chop them up for you.
Yeah,
I'm a bit jealous of the Instagram sponsorship that you guys obviously acquired for us. I want to be in on that too. For those who don't know the inside joke, a company that's about smoothing certain bits of men's genitalia reached out to us about sponsorship. And I think that's because of Ilya and Andy's swim trunk photos.
Well,
we're just in talks at the moment.
Yeah, we do. Let's just be honest. We both look bang tidy in those shorts.
Smoothing out the deal with Smooth My.
No promotions.
Want. All righty, so let's jump over to the news. I guess let's kick things off potentially with this program called Cut, which Lex found. I don't know if, Lex, you want to speak about it or...
Sorry, I was muted then. That's bad podcasting. I can mention this. So this is a project called Cut, and it was done between London College of Fashion and Black Horse Lane Atelier. And it was a research project that was part of University of the Arts London's research output. And basically what they did is it was based in East London, around kind of Walthamstow area, which is where Black Horse Lane is. And they got a load of knives that had been, I think they got local use to kind of collect knives that had been related to knife crime, melt them down into rivets for making jeans, and then basically get lots of local use into this project where then they made jeans using these, using denim from Black Horse Lane and these rivets, which they all designed to the project. So I think it's just a really kind of nice, positive project that the denim industry was doing something to kind of give back to the local community. And I know that's something that's really important to Black Horse Lane, is working with the local community. For a local community. So it's a really positive project. I mean, I don't know if anyone else has anything they'd like to add or say about it.
Yeah, well, one thing I'd add is I think it's quite an interesting project for Northeast London in particular. So living in Waltham Forest for 6 or 7 years, you know, there was quite a lot of knife crime, a lot of knife violence. And the area where Black Horse Lane Atelier is located, near Black Horse Road Station, that's an area that had a lot of crime historically. So I think it's probably quite dear to the heart of Han and the business to get involved with that, because knife crime is such a problem in Waltham Forest. Even just in the past 2-3 months, I remember someone, like a 15-year-old kid, was stabbed in the neck or something like that in Waltham Forest. So anything to kind of get knives out of that area and make it into something positive is amazing. And so, yeah, I think this is really, really incredible to find a way to hopefully turn something that's a negative thing into something positive, you know, just melt it down and make something good out of it. Andy and Tom brought up a good point that we actually recently learned about a gent named Glenn, who was previously related to the Clobbercom podcast. He was one of the contributors there, has just passed. And just want to send out our condolences as a podcast. I myself didn't know Glenn personally, so I can't really speak to it. But just want to mention that if anyone's ever needing someone to talk to or going through some hard times, you know, we're a group of denim heads hanging out virtually, but we're also there for you as people in real life. So by all means, Instagram us, email us, and if you need someone to chat to, I don't know if Andy or Tom or anyone else wants to say anything specific.
No, I think you've pretty much covered it. Just if, you know, we all go through periods where we feel, you know, where we feel we're kind of at rock bottom. Just don't be afraid to talk to someone. Obviously, it doesn't have to be us. Be anyone. It can be your best mate, you know, your partner, your family. I know it can be seen as very difficult to do that. And I think it, you know, especially with the way men are kind of traditionally told to kind of bottle it up and be very stoic about how they deal with any kind of hardship, which I think is covered very well by, you know, other podcasts like Viv and Rebellious Veer. Just don't be afraid to have a chat. Go have a brew, you know, go have a pint and just air it out. Or if you as a friend think one of your friend, you know, if you see one of your friends struggling or you think they're struggling, just have a chat with them and see if they'll open up. You know, it's a very difficult subject to broach, you know, what happened. And it is something, unfortunately, that is quite common amongst men. So just, yeah. Have a chat. If you either open up yourself or if you're a friend, go and talk to anyone you think struggling. Or if not, do it anonymously through, you know, the various helplines that are available. There are people there to help. You're never on your own.
That's very good advice, Andy. I think, you know, it's a very sad, you know, very sad news that, you know, what we found out. And I think the best thing is to do is talk to people if you can, and there's always someone out there who's willing to listen, and there's plenty of channels to go down.
Anything else folks would like to mention from the news?
Yeah, I'd like to mention the Nippers, who is a new brand which is run by Ryan Darra, who hails from Northern Ireland, and he's decided to launch a denim brand for the little people in our lives, and I'm talking about children, of course, or anyone who's under, I guess, a certain height. So he's decided to make repro jeans based around Levi's 503ZXX. And other similar pairs, which he had previously been buying for his son. He's just decided to go out and make some raw denim. And these are made in Japan to the normal standards that we expect. And they are looking really good. He's had some samples back, and he's been slowly putting everything together. I think I've seen some leather patches recently with the logo stamped on there, which look really neat. He's also just released some t-shirts with some graphics, which also look great. And yeah, I think he's doing quite a cool little thing. It's a passion project for him. So I think it's quite a nice thing to get behind him and support him.
And those of you with kids, so Ilya and Andy, how do you guys feel about raw denim for children? Is that something that you guys would be purchasing for for your little ones?
Well, I think I would, my strategy would be to size up as I do for myself and let them, you know, to get a little bit of more life out of the pair of jeans. Because obviously what you don't want to do is buy a pair which is going to last for 6 months and that's it. Although some people in our community do the same thing.
Shots fired.
Yeah, so I definitely would, and I have thought about it before. Yeah, what about you, Andy?
I don't need to worry about it yet because my little one's only 14 months old. He's just started. He's at the point now where he can walk across the living room. So
not quite ready.
Yeah, it's all about super stretchy stuff and stuff he'll grow into. Yeah, I've got a few years before I need to worry about him having to wear something like that.
But would you as a hypothetical question, do you think?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Like you said, sizing up's good. The problem is that raw denim of any type is going to be expensive. And the way little kids cut about and just, you know, tear things apart, crawling around and doing everything. Even if you sized up, there's a high chance that it's going to last about 5 minutes because they find a way of destroying everything.
I think the jeans will last the lifetime of the, you know, of that, of their size, I guess. Yeah. I don't think they'll break by the time, you know, before he'll outsize them.
Mm.
That's a worry. I think the biggest worry is just he's, you know, he's going to outgrow them.
Yes. Yeah. Size up thinking, oh well, these will last about a year, and then they have a growth spurt and they're done within 2 months. It is something I'll consider. My wife will think that I'm an idiot, but no change there. So yeah, it is something I'd like to consider for him. He might hate him and just want to wear popper pants the rest of his life or something, but we shall see.
It's quite like a nice little memento to have, though, like, you know, when they're older, you know, you've got them kind of kept in a box. Like working at RM, they used to have like the little baby boots that I'm sure were like about 120 quid or something like that, and you know, the kids would wear them for like, you know, all of like a couple of months, but then like the parents kept them and they've got like all their little kids baby boots like sitting in a box as like a nice little memento. So yeah, I guess it's one of those things where, you know, it's baby clothes. They're only going to wear it for so long, but
yeah,
they'll last and they'll stay around. Just remember it.
The other problem you've got is when he's a teenager and he starts rebelling against you, if you've made him wear raw denim all that time, he's going to grow into a teenager who wears skinny jeans, stretch denim to rebel against his dad.
I dread what the fashion will be when he's in his teens. It'll be Jacobean ruffs.
It'll be your shorts, that's what it's going to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah. My son.
So, teach him young, I say. The brand and the Instagram account is Nippers PW. You can find the account there. So go check it out.
On a related note, I'm still yet to find the name of it, but back in the days when I was working with Black Horse Lane, there's a lady from Winchester who would use offcuts from the jeans production to make like little baby rompers. Oh, sorry, I just sneezed on recording. Apologies.
We're so professional.
Oh man, I'll edit that out. But yeah, she would like collect denim offcuts from Black Horse Lane and then make like little baby onesies, rompers, jumpers, whatever you want to call those things, like little poofy pants for babies. If I find the name, I'll probably drop it in the episode description. Future David here. That brand is called Field Play Kids. I think they're pretty affordable since it's all offcuts based.
I'd like to see someone do some like dungarees or overalls in the scene, because I think they can last a lot longer. For example, we bought my son a pair of Oshkosh Hickory overalls, and he's been wearing them for like maybe 2 years, maybe even longer, because you can cuff them up And then, as you know, as they grow taller, you just release the cuffs. And he's now at the point where, you know, the cuff is almost too short for him. So, but we can keep that and, you know, pass that down to my daughter. So I think that could be maybe even a better idea at some point for someone to start making those. I think TCB do one, or maybe even several.
What, kid stuff?
Overalls.
They do. They do. I keep looking at them, but I cannot justify spending that amount of money on something that I know he'll grow out of very quickly. But they look they're absolutely adorable.
Well, like I said, the Oshkosh pair that we've had, he's worn for going on 3 years now, so it's not too bad.
Maybe someone could do something clever with like the Type 2 style pleats that you could like let out to make the garment longer or something over time.
That'd be cool.
Design project for Lex there.
Pleated legs.
Pleated legs.
Okay, I'll look into that one for you.
That's British sarcasm, isn't that?
Yeah. He definitely will not.
It will never happen.
How do folks feel about the recent trend, and this is, I guess, news related, with like RGT and 316 releasing stonewashed garments?
Nope.
Hate it. Absolutely hate it.
Yeah.
Because there are enough options out there for stonewashed denim everywhere. I don't think we need it in our niche little, you know, scene. I know the denim is obviously better than what you'd get on the high street or, you know, from more brands or whatever. I don't think it looks good. Two, I think, you know, you're going back to, I don't know whether they're using washes or whether they're using lasers, but if they are doing washes, obviously that's not great for the environment. But the most awful thing about it is just looks, I think it looks bad.
I mean, I get why they're doing it, because it's on trend and it will open up their, you know, them to a wider market. Not a good look. Stonewashed denim didn't look good in the 80s. It doesn't look good now, in my humble opinion. I think, you know, it's a bit of a shame they've gone that route, but I understand why they've done it.
It's interesting because both those brands come from like streetwear origins, and like maybe it's kind of going back to that a bit. Personal opinion is I don't find the aesthetic off-putting, but I think, yeah, if they're doing like bleaching, pumice stone, all that kind of horrible stuff, then I can't endorse it. But if it's all laser based, then I guess it doesn't bother me too much, just because the eco consciousness aspect. But I don't think I would ever wear anything stonewashed. I think Tellison said it best when they said, why would you pay someone extra money to sell you a garment that's going to last less long?
Yeah, I mean, kind of one of the reasons why I got into raw denim was like the fact that the natural fibers are in a better state, or in their natural state with raw denim. While if you're lasering it, washing it, enzyming it, all this, you're damaging it. So it's like, why would you buy damaged products? It's like you don't order a meal and you've got a bite taken out your sandwich. Like,
Future David here. Totally relevant to this conversation is the Key and Peele Ratatouille sketch on YouTube. I highly recommend checking that out.
Just like, you know, why? You know, I get the aesthetic, but that's the whole point of wearing it down and putting your own mark on it. But, you know, I feel like they'll need to follow the trends to kind of stay relevant to as wide a market as possible. Well, but it's just a shame they have to sacrifice those original intentions.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like, I don't know if they've talked about this, but I wonder if it's more of like a business decision in terms of, look, you know, we want to grow the brand, and to be able to do that, we need to open up a market, or is it something that they actually like themselves? If that makes sense. Yeah, I don't know. Again, I don't know if there's been any like articles out there or so that you know, them talking about why they've put this out, but that would be one of the questions I would have for them.
Mm. I haven't seen anything being mentioned, but the fact that there's more than, you know, more than three companies doing it around the same time, it would kind of indicate that it's a trend. I mean, even like Real McCoys were releasing, you know, jeans and jackets in the same kind of washes. Or I think maybe Real McCoys is more of a second hand vintage style, but still, I think, you know, and
I think Full Count have done it as well, haven't they?
Well, I think Full Count and Warehouse have been doing it for quite a while, but I think they've been doing it as like a second hand series with fades that kind of match up to what you would find, you know, of a well-worn in pair of jeans, whereas, you know, what 316 and RGT are doing are just like giving it a basic kind of a wash, just to rinse all the, you know, the dark denim out of it and go for a lighter denim. Like I said, I understand why people, you know, go for it, because it's makes it quite a nice contrast to, you know, the dark pair of jeans that they might be wearing or the jacket. But yeah, I'm just not a big fan of Stonewash.
Yeah, I've just been on both websites.
Yeah.
They both say they're stonewashed. Rogue Territory have given a little bit more detail, saying that their wash system is low water usage with pumice stones and temperature control. 316 doesn't go into that level of detail. I would hope that they also do it in a sustainable way as possible. But
both of them being based in LA, they might even be using the same facilities to...
Exactly.
Yeah, make a lot of sense.
I guess, it's interesting because in theory, the garments are, you know, cut and sewn in California and then washed afterwards before the hardware is put on. I know if they were getting the fabric washed, which you can do like on the roll in Japan, the Japanese mills are required by law to recycle all of their outputs. So like all of the water with indigo and pumice, whatever, the government requires, they actually recycle that on site. So it could be done in a sustainable way if it's done in Japan. But if it's done in a US based wash house, it's probably not. Obviously, Andrew, Johan, and Carl, if you guys have any news for any advice for us on the sustainability piece of your approaches, please reach out and we'll make sure and update listeners. But I don't think the US has any kind of regulations around that.
Sus.
Yeah. And to Kevin's point, I think it totally probably is about total addressable market, right? You know, if you look at someone like Flathead, they stuck to their guns and only made the products they wanted to and the way they wanted to, and they pretty much went out of business for a while, or I think had to claim bankruptcy and then came back, which is great. But I think, yeah, if you look at like the total addressable market for wash denim, it's going to probably be 10 times or 100 times the size of what you could get for raw denim. And so if we see that they do like more and more of these garments each season, that probably indicates that they're just selling a lot more and therefore growing that part of the business. Like I know that's why Apollos, you know, stopped making clothing, because 95% of their sales were their market bags. And so they said, why bother making clothes anymore?
Yeah, and we kind of like, maybe we could have seen it coming. I think in a couple of episodes ago, we talked about the 316 lookbook that none of us really liked, maybe a few items here and there, but that was already very much like streetwear, almost like, you know, just high street fashion kind of stuff.
Normcore.
So you've obviously got people coming into store, because in 316's case, they also have physical stores, which they obviously need to pay for and stuff. So people come into those stores for those particular items, you know, of those lookbooks that we looked at. And then they might want to get a pair of jeans with them, but they don't really want to necessarily, might not want to commit to buying a pair of raw denim, or that might not be what they like or their style. So from that sense, it makes sense for them to do it, because, you know, if they've got those people in store, then it'd be probably an easier sell as well to just sell some more products.
Related question. It makes you think a bit about one wash or single rinse garments as well. So I know more and more these days, whether you buy from like Denimio or Okuyama Denim, or even like domestic-based shops, unsamphorized garments are often being shipped with one single wash or one single rinse. Like I know these drawstring shorts from 316 I was talking about, they've had a one wash to remove any shrinkage. How do folks feel about that from like a environmental standpoint? Because that does mean industrially washing a garment a single time and having a bunch of water with indigo dye in it that the makers have to deal with.
Yeah, that's a good question, actually. I never really thought about it like that. I do have my sugar canes are once washed. So, I mean, if you think about it, indeed, like, it's probably not that good for the environment. I don't know if it would be... Are you saying that those stores would give them a rinse? Or would the brands do this? Because, again, if it's a Japanese brand, that mill will have to... You know, if they get their garments once washed from there, they'll have to recycle, obviously. But if it's the stores or stuff... I don't know how that works.
I know there's a few Japanese brands, like I think Eternal, who do... the washing themselves, and then they like just hang them up in the tree in like the yard of their factory or whatever. So I think that's a lot more kind of small scale. You know, they do a run and then they just kind of hand dip them in water and just hang them up. And that's why they kind of retain a lot of their indigo. I guess it's not, one washing isn't great compared to, you know, just raw. But I think it'd probably be a better middle ground than full-on stonewashing or, you know, fully fading up a pair of jeans. So it would be the preferable out of, you know, fades or not, you know.
But from an environmental standpoint, if you rinse them once, you're washing the starch out, which will probably make them last slightly longer.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got something and people buy it raw and then never wash it, it'll just, you know what it's like, it'll just crack up and just get holes instantly.
Or like our buddy.
Here we go again.
Yeah, let's not go down that way. No slander on here or kind of name calling.
Lex is just opening a can of worms.
No worms.
Oh, have I started something? Anyway.
Yeah.
But my PBJ jacket was bought with one wash, and I've never washed it myself. But I think because it's been rinsed, had I not, it probably would be in slightly worse. You'd probably get higher contrast fades, but it'd be in slightly worse condition it is now. So, you know, you've got to wash it off eventually. So I don't think a single just a wash is a bad thing.
My Uis were one wash from Ribbon Hide, but that was because that was the shop's decision. They knew because it's such a popular fit for them and release, they just pre-washed the load, so it kind of took the hassle out for a lot of people. But I mean, I would have bought them unwashed. It was just what they had available, but yeah, it ultimately meant that they will last a bit longer.
Would you guys classify when you buy a pair of jeans that have had one rinse as still being a raw garment, would you call them raw denim, even if it's just been rinsed before you've bought it?
I would.
For all intents and purposes, yeah, it feels like it's still raw, but I guess technically speaking, you can't say it still is. But I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know, a piece of bread that you've toasted for just very lightly on each side is still, you know, it's technically toast at that point, but it's still pretty much kind of like the bread not being toasted.
But I mean, if you don't count it as raw denim, if you're in that mindset, the moment your jeans touch a pair of water being soaked or have their first wash, then you could also say that they're no longer raw denim
or sweated.
The only kind of term that's like true purist, I guess, would be loom state, which is like it hasn't had anything whatsoever done to it after it came off the loom. But yeah, I mean, that's such a small subset of the raw denim hobby, I guess. It's shades of gray, right? 50 shades
of
gray.
I guess raw is like a very big umbrella term for kind of lots of very specific things. So, you know, some people might consider one wash within that umbrella. But then you've got loom state, samphorized.
How much masochism do you like to mix in with your raw denim breaking in?
On a scale of one to no children.
So this week's discussion topic is this episode's discussion topic is about our own unique approaches to style in raw denim. Obviously, we've all got kind of a different vantage on how we like to express our own looks. And so I thought it'd be kind of cool just a bit of a roundtable where we each kind of mention what we like to do. It's our own unique look. And, you know, whether that be brands, whether that be styles, garments, et cetera, just sort of, yeah, what makes each of our looks or styles unique. Maybe I might suggest Ilya kick it off. So I think you've got probably the most pronounced style look out of any of us.
It's the most stylish.
He's got the illest cuts.
It's cuts.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's funny because that's his Instagram.
Hey, hello. I guess what I find interesting and what inspires me, is mid 20th century Americana, basically. You know, whether that's biker culture, cowboy culture, you know, military garments, and just reinterpreting those and mixing them in together. I think if I had to say what makes my style unique would be I quite like a challenge for myself. So sometimes I would pick a garment that might be a little bit out there. And like maybe, for example, like the Club Stubborn British Army overalls. It's not something that everyone would wear. Because they might think, oh, you know, I couldn't pull this off or this or that. I kind of think that, what the hell, let's do it. Let's give it a go and try to, I guess, normalize it by adding a denim jacket or some boots to it. And, kind of grounded that way. In terms of favorite brands, I think I've steadily gone into Warehouse, Mr. Freedom, Buzz Rickson. Those are probably my three kind of go-tos. And everything else around, I guess I would pick and choose here and there of the items that I quite like. What's important to me in terms of design is interesting pockets. I think I always look at pockets as a kind of thing to separate them from other garments. So for example, the ranch blouse on the, from Mr. Freedom, those chest pockets, it's almost you'd find that on a Western shirt, for example, they're slanted and they've got real character to them, maybe a little bit of scalloping, asymmetrical as well. So that always, that's always bonus points in my book. I think that's kind of the basis of it. And as I've progressed into, into my style journey, I guess, the cuts have become a little bit wider, maybe a little bit more boxy. A little bit more straight fit, I guess. Yeah.
You get quite a lot of bits that are, very unique design-wise that just kind of stand out a little bit from kind of your standard type 2, 3, et cetera, which I enjoy.
Yeah, it's for me, I think, when you enter, I think a lot of people, when they enter this kind of scene, a type 3 might be the easiest option to go for, or it's the one that everyone knows about. But then at a certain point, you might feel, oh, okay, I kind of want to, explore something else. So what about you, Tom? How do you find your style has developed and developing?
It started back when I was at Levi's, and it's very much, the period of black skinny jeans and tees and hoodies and stuff like that, and then kind of going down like rabbit hole of heritage and design styles of the kind of early pre-1950s, everything like that. So I suppose my three keywords are cowboy, farmer, and railroad worker. They're my three mantras of everything I buy. I always try and get pieces that I enjoy the details and like specific construction techniques that they've used. So like the Stevenson shirt I bought, because I haven't got one with any of the vent holes or that particular style of pocket and design. And you know, the fabric as well is beautiful. I'm not particularly interested in jeans that, you know, just have a very nice fabric. There's got to be that little bit more design wise. So brands like PBJ, I appreciate the fabric and I know it's really good, but design wise it's a little bit basic. So I always kind of look for something with just that little bit extra, which obviously I translated over to United overalls when I made them, but shameless plug. I do still wear quite a lot of like graphic tees and stuff like that, and band tees. They'll always be kind of that side of the wardrobe that's usually comes out a bit more at summertime.
Do you think there's a conflict? Do you think there's a conflict between the some of those looks? Or you don't mind and you just, you know, you mix it in when you feel like it?
Yeah, I think if kind of when the weather's a little bit warmer, if I've got like a work shirt over a band tee, it's quite a pretty standard look. People aren't gonna be like, oh, that's a 1930s shirt with a modern t-shirt, you can't do that. Obviously when I go full regalia in a almost costume, and I've got my Stetson and my way too tight overalls on, then you're not really gonna see the bantee at all underneath, so it hides away. I wear what I like. I don't really think too much about it. If I like the piece, I'll get it. I try and do it on a little bit of a budget and, you know, try to get secondhand where possible, like eBay and stuff like that. It's always good to trawl through there, as long as you know kind of the right keywords to search up, you know, you can find some good pieces, and that obviously limits your impact environmentally as well. There's always stuff that I consider, but I try and aim for that 30s 20s look. Obviously I'm a little bit slimmer than most people, so I can get away with the slimmer look, but I have moved more away from that the more I've bought.
Are you saying we're too fat to dress like that, Tom?
Yeah, you're all fat and old.
Angela's type 2 pleats.
Yeah,
8 pleats all I'm done.
One thing that came to mind, Tom, when you mentioned your style of farmer meets cowboy meets railroad worker, was on the Heddles podcast, Reed, who used to work at Union Made, mentioned the fact that like when they first opened up, the dudes in the shop would like literally have pieces of like straw wheat that they'd be chewing on in the shop. And I lived in San Francisco at that time and probably actually bought something from Reed without knowing who he was. But I remember I'd go in there and they're like all dressed like people with like a 1800s mercantile, literally chewing on pieces of straw wheat in the shop during work hours. And it was like the weirdest thing I'd ever seen.
I feel like there's like a line where some of the pieces there are quite timeless from that era. So like a 1930s work shirt doesn't look too much different. There's obviously the design cues taken from that bit, like a chin strap and stuff like that, that, you know, can work quite modern as well, but some people just take it as an excuse to get into a costume. Mine's a little bit costumey, but not too much. But
have you thought about kind of embracing it proper? So like actually getting like a pocket watch on a chain, or like, I don't know, a special lighter that fits in the lighter pocket, or kind of like actually, you know, using some of those implements that were popular at that time.
Coal miner hat.
I'll have a little candle just sitting on a little hat.
Carry around a canary with you in a cage.
I'd get thrown out by my girlfriend if I'd done that. So And I think none of my friends will talk to me again, apart from you guys. I like the fact that a jacket has the pocket watch hole on it and the pocket to put the pocket watch in. But I don't need a pocket watch because I've got a normal watch. there's no need. And then you're taking it almost from this is kind of old stuff, but timeless and can be interpreted in a modern way, to I am wearing a costume and I'm living my life like I'm 1930s. You know, and they've probably got original deadstock 1930s underwear that comes up to your nipples. It's just, no, I just...
And you can't do that, race, please.
Yeah, I'll do a post just in underwear up to my nipples. On my OnlyFans.
You don't want to go full-on Great Depression porn.
No, and there's like some guys, so there's like a Facebook group for vintage menswear, and some of it is like just heritage, you know, they wear Red Wings and some Selvage, you know, it's looser 50s, 40s cut, whatever. And then there are some people who, you know, all of their trousers come like past their rib cage, like above the rib cage. And nothing is made like that anymore. There is no need to live your life like that. It's just, you know, the difference between kind of middle ground and to the extreme where people live their life like that.
I love how every time we go to like an event at like Clutch Cafe, there's always that one constituency of dudes who like look like they walked off the set of Peaky Blinders that show up every time.
That and the guys that, they all look like 1940s Private Eyes. they've all been watching too many film noirs and...
Which
probably call their girlfriend Dame all the time. I wonder why they're being made to sleep on the couch.
Then you got the like hardcore kind of Harley set, and then like the Cafe Racer clan. There's all these unique sub styles that are so interesting to see pop up around our can't say a hobby. I'll get in trouble.
How would they classify us then if they see us? Because obviously we're doing this.
Nerds.
Yeah, denim nerds is probably the right term.
Nerds.
Does anyone else want to speak about their style?
I was going to say, what about you, Kevin? How do you see your style? And do you think it's changed a lot since you got into it, or is it being kind of constant?
I find it really hard to define my style. I don't necessarily have any. Like, I don't really take too much inspiration from any previous eras or anything like that. So I guess my style is on the more modern side of things. So my jeans tend to be a bit more of the slimmer cuts. And then I guess like the other side of my style is any of my tops, my shirts and stuff like that. And, you know, I've talked about this in a previous episode as well, is that I like them to have a bit of a pattern or some color to it. It's quite funny. Like, it never really used to be like that, but when I moved to Australia, everyone in the office always calls me Party Shirt Kevin, because all of my shirts...
That's amazing.
All of my shirts have prints and patterns on it and things like that, so they just see me as a guy who constantly wears a party shirt, which is quite funny. But yeah, and again, that's one of the things that I said last time as well, is it's hard to find that in the denim community. Like in the you know, denim brands just don't tend to do that much. So I do sometimes have to, or I used to have to, you know, venture out into the high street fashion brands as well. And I got help with that because my girlfriend used to work at Scotch and Soda, so big discounts made it easier. And they just do amazing prints and stuff like that on shirts. So has it changed in terms of, it has a little bit, but that's more because, you know, it's a lot hotter in Australia, so I wear less shirts now and more t-shirts. So I've gotten back into graphic shirts, graphic t-shirts as well, and a lot of those that I have are either band shirts or shirts from local stores. I've got a bunch of brewery t-shirts, for example. that I wear quite a lot, and those kind of things. So especially over COVID, I've tried to like support all of the like local businesses, not with just buying their like beers and other products and stuff like that, but also if they did have any merch, I would buy a t-shirt off them. Like the local pub next door, they did a t-shirt print during COVID. And the only thing that was open was their bottle shop. So we could still go and buy beers there. But when I saw the t-shirt, I was like, yeah, I wanted to support you a bit more and just buy the t-shirt as well. That's kind of like my story. But yeah, as I said, I don't think I can really define my style.
So you've got like a slim rock and roll bottom half and then party up top.
Party up top, mate.
You need to get some of those scuba shorts to bring the party down south.
maybe not. We'll see about that.
Yeah, plus one on Andy's comment that every time we talk to Kevin, he sounds less and less Dutch and more Australian.
Yeah. Tiny look, that twang is creeping through, mate.
I'm blending in here, you know. There's not much I can do about it, unfortunately.
Parties on the high street. Denim heads are too serious to party.
Yeah, absolutely.
Except for me.
And what about your style journey, Andy?
Oh, fuck knows. I'm basic, aren't I? I think I'm slowly changing my look, but I'm still very much plaid shirts and kind of tapered jeans. That's just what I naturally gravitate to, especially when it's colder. Like Tom, band tees, heavily featuring my rotation, though are slowly disappearing as I kind of just accept that I'm in my mid-30s and I'm probably getting a bit too old for that. But yeah, I mean, I as I've mentioned before,
I'm never too old.
I was going to say.
60-year-old bloke in the super faded tee from like some obscure band from when I was 25.
All fully under the arms, like
perfect gym wear. Yeah, so I mean, growing up listening to, you know, hardcore and metal and stuff like that, and kind of being in that scene, band t-shirts and graphic tees are very common, and it becomes kind of part of the uniform, and it's something that is very hard to shake. I will naturally go for them. Also, they're cheap. And you can pick them up whenever you go to a show. And so they still exist within my rotation. I'm starting to slowly embrace fuller fits, leg-wise, and a bit more heritage-y gear, as you know, you've seen with those fatigue trousers and the ranch blouse and stuff like that. But saying that, my first denim jacket, like decent denim jacket, was a Type 1, not a Type 3, which is kind of the Mustang one. I think...
A black Type 1.
So it was, that, yeah. Yeah,
had my, a little bit of punk to it.
My Indigo Fairy Grant, yeah. Which is still floating around. I kind of take cues from, you know, various eras, you know, 40s through to kind of the 70s in kind of how I like dressing. And I think it is slowly going more to the earlier styles, though I don't think I'll go full whole hog on that. I still like quite a bit of a taper. It's just that's really been it, really. I don't think I'm massively unique in the way I dress. I think it's quite a standard look within the raw denim scene, and that doesn't bother me. I know people will mock the kind of the basic denim head look, but it's popular for a reason. That's just me, really. Nothing particularly exciting. I just like wearing what I wear.
What about you, David?
Yeah, I guess for
neon.
Me, neon.
That's not everything. I guess for me, there's a.
You wish it was.
No. I gotta have a balance.
You set yourself.
It's all about balance. Gotta have a lot of black and indigo too. I guess for me, there's kind of a couple buckets that I think inspire my style. So when I was growing up, I was really into kind of like Arc'teryx and brands like that, even still really inspire me today. So I like a lot of like tactical looking kind of high tech looking stuff. So whether that
which is generally not tactical in the slightest.
I know it's all just bullshit marketing. but I don't know, that kind of look that you would get if you went to like Dispatch or you know, Triple Ought Design, these kind of brands, but even just like Arc'teryx and Nike and that kind of that high tech look, maybe it's a better way to put it instead of tactical, high tech look, which is why I like a lot of the like neon stuff, you know, old Nike Air Maxes or old Arc'teryx design from the 90s, a lot of neon yellow, neon green kind of stuff. I also really like a lot of the kind of, you know, Trent Reznor, Henry Rollins, punk, you know, hardcore look, so like black rocker look. Growing up in Austin, there's a lot of like really cool looking rocker folks, so that's why I have such a love for like black shirts and black westerns and that kind of thing. And you know, all of my shoe collection is almost entirely all black. I have very little brown or tan. And I think the other kind of third inspiration is, you know, going to a University of Texas and being around fraternity culture and stuff like that made me kind of embrace prep / Ivy style a bit, which is why I like, you know, kind of like your hand sewn moccasins. Almost all of my wardrobe is button down shirts with a collar. You know, I usually wear a collar. I rarely ever wear, you know, a t-shirt. So I think, yeah, for me, it's kind of that sort of tactical, technical, high-tech, streetwear-y kind of thing, hence the neon and the whatever. The kind of rocker, goth, industrial look, hence all of the black. And then a bit of the kind of prep, sort of Ivy stuff mixed in. I think I used to...
See, people now are going to imagine you walking around in, like, stripy rugby shirts.
And, I hate stripes.
And those like black combat trousers with all the kind of the straps hanging off them and the zips, yeah. And probably a gas mask.
And the big like Camden boots with like, all
yeah,
the
and maybe a big black trench coat as well, because you're secretly a big Ministry fan too.
No, I definitely didn't explain this at all well. But, like, it'd be more like a pair of like grey.
If people want to. If people want to send in pictures of how they imagine David to dress according to this description, please do, and we'll post them.
Yeah,
on
we
the,
need some like
Instagram.
Good illustrations of like Matrix meets Ivy League.
Actually, that's not too far off. That's not too far.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's I don't know. I think there's one style I'll call out just as a last comment, and that's that there was like this really freaking cool look that you would often see in Austin, where it'd be like someone wearing like a pair of like badass worn out cowboy boots, like vintage cowboy boots, a pair of like really, really beat up, torn up, faded, like boot cut or like vintage Levi's 501s, and like a black V-neck t-shirt with a ton of tattoos. It's just kind of like this really cool, simple rocker look, you know, black worn out jeans and like, you know, I don't know, really cool tatted up person. And like that was a big inspiration. It's like they were rocker, but it was simple. It wasn't flash, you know, no stripes, no rugbies, that kind of stuff. Just really simple, like, because that's one thing you'll see about my style as well, is I almost never wear prints at all, never wear patterns, with maybe the exception of like Wabash or maybe hickory stripe. But I really don't get into prints. I really like solid colors, although I do love camo. I love camouflage. Anything camo, I'm down for.
Neon camouflage, like in the LEG movie, where they all rock up in like the bright neon and pink and yellow.
Yeah.
That's David on the weekend.
But anyways, that's me. What about you, Lex?
Well, I would say, I think you probably, maybe it was a couple of episodes ago, David described my style best as basically 90s grunger. And I don't think I've really ever kind of grown out of that. I don't know. So when I first started getting into raw denim, I don't know about you guys, but I started buying super slim raws. So I think Edwin, same. I think it's 55s, which are so slim, and I've still got them.
It's mad around the ankle.
Yeah, and I can't wear them now. My bum just hangs out. Like, I don't know if they were always like that, or whether I've put on weight. I've probably put on a bit of weight, but I mean, literally, they make it just to the top of my arse crack when I'm standing up. And anytime I bend down, you get like a good couple of inches of crack, which no one wants.
Now we know what's on your OnlyFans.
Yeah, there we go. Go to crack, 2 inches of crack at OnlyFans.com. There'd be money in there. Anyway, so I think other than I now wear a slightly looser cut, my style hasn't changed that much. Just slightly looser cut of jeans, plaid shirt or Hawaiian shirt in summer. It's me done, sorted. My style's generally not really moved on since the 90s, like dressed slightly like Bill and Ted or Wayne's World.
Yes.
So one thing that I think is an interesting question, and I think this is really particular for you, Lex, and that's that, like, so I started playing around with menswear design at one point, and I basically found that, like, the stuff I was wanting to design was almost like my ideal style. I never actually made any of it, but, like, given you're a maker, if you were, like, making yourself clothes, what would you be making? So I think that's probably a great expression of your style.
Yeah, when I make stuff, I tend to keep it a little bit more simple. Occasionally, when I'm doing things, I try to do a bit more interest. But I always think I've kind of over designed it, and I think that's partly because my design background is actually a women's wear designer, and women's wear and men's wear, the way you design them, are very different. So whenever I design men's wear, I get a little bit carried away, and it just looks slightly kind of camp and feminine. So for that reason, I do tend to try and consciously pare it down when I do my own stuff.
It's probably a market for it though, mate.
Oh yeah, yeah, probably, yeah, yeah. But it's, if you think about it, it's like the sort of thing that we're into for menswear. It's all about really subtle detailing, whereas women's wear, you can do more and you can get a bit more carried away and you can be a bit more adventurous. Whereas, you know, other than interesting shaped pockets and a few different cuts, what we do is all relatively simple. I have tried smartening up a few times and trying to be a little bit smarter. And I know in the kind of Ilya and Andy kind of tuck their shirts in, don't you guys? And I've tried doing that a few times to make kind of smarten up my look, but it always ends up just half hanging out, half tucked in, half hanging out, and I look even worse. So I've just given up trying to be smart. I'll never look like sharp like you guys. I'll just always look a bit like some 90s grunge band or something.
I'll never tuck in a flannel.
Oh, you don't tuck in a
flannel? No,
oh god, no. I tried that once and I nearly melted. Awful. I know Ilya digs it, but nah.
So take away from Lex's shirts. The takeaway from Lex is that we're all a bunch of tryhards.
Yeah.
No, no, I'm just, I can't do it. I'm just too scruffy, you know.
I'm kidding.
I'd say that's about it, really. I wouldn't really say other than that I've got a style as such.
Maybe one last quick, kind of quick fire round to wrap up the discussion topic. But if everyone was to kind of quickly spit out a wardrobe, or like an outfit, let's say, that best exemplifies your look, what would those garments be? Maybe we'll kick it off again with Ilya.
Okay, I'll go for my indigo watch cap, a Mr. Freedom Ranch blouse with a a warehouse sweatshirt, oatmeal, my Bosrixon fatigues, and donkey punches. That'll be probably something I easily go to all year round.
And what next, was it Kevin or Tom that we spoke to next?
Tom, I think.
Yeah, maybe me. I'd have my Stetson, chambray shirt, my chore coat, Wabash chore coat, United overalls jeans. Oh, shameless plug. and probably my Thorogood roofer boots.
Kevin?
For me, it would probably be my 316 ranch jacket, and then any of my 30 party shirts that I own. Probably, I would say, my PBJs in terms of jeans, KS013s. And then either a pair of sneakers. I've got some ASICs with Okayama denim on them as well. Or Red Wings or RMs. I mix those three up quite a lot. So
second the RMs.
Can't go wrong with those. That would be me.
Andy?
Yeah, it'd be Indigo, Farah, Flannel. Uus 400T jeans. And the Wesco Standard and Strange Knuckle Dragger engineer boots. And then maybe my Ironheart Duck Canvas Type 3.
Cool. I guess I can quickly go. I think for me, it'd be a pair of, this is from bottom to top, so a pair of Alden Shell Cordovan shoes in black, or if it's summertime, probably my all-black Quoddy, they call them Blukers, but hand-sewn moccasins. Shorts, it'd be my Big John's Tenu Denim collaboration Bermuda shorts. Or for jeans, my 316 Shadow Selvage Slim Straight. Probably would have on a black RGT Western, or these days I'm really getting excited by Free Notes Western shirts, like either their Rambler shirt in all black or their black Wabash Western. For jacket, I'd probably have my Levi's neon green Type 3 if I want to be ridiculous.
Yes.
or a Paulus indigo chore coat if I'm trying to look decent, and maybe like a pair of black Ray-Ban sunglasses. Like I have a pair of the square Wayfarers that I really like, and then probably like a wrist cuff, like a black leather Tanner Goods wrist cuff or something like that, to try and add a bit of embellishment. Yeah. Lex?
I would probably say US plaid shirt, black t-shirt, because I'm too fat these days to wear white t-shirts, and my belly bulges too much, so black slimming. Vintage Levi's, slip-on Vans, vintage Ray-Bans, done.
Nice.
Make sure you avoid the white cycling kit as well, then.
Yeah. I am. Oh God, I mean, I do have Lycra for when I'm cycling, but my belly these days, when you've got like the little bib and the t-shirt, because the t-shirts are cut so short, there's a little bit of gap where it's got a tiny little bit of beer belly pokes out. And I'm like, oh God, it's not a strong look at all. It's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed for myself.
I didn't really think of when you mentioned sunglasses then as well. And I totally forgot about things like the little additions.
Like watches and
things like that. Yeah. I mean,
we'll be here all day.
Okay.
Let's do another quick fire round of favorite accessories to get your look. Starting at the top again with Ilya.
Suspenders.
Obviously, I'll wear glasses, so Moscots, and then I've got my clip-ons for those. Good art rings. And belt buddy for my keys. I already mentioned my hat, so yeah, I'll leave it at that.
And back to Tom.
Got a silver ring that I made in a little workshop down in Canterbury, so I rock that. And bandanas. I haven't actually put a bandana on for ages, but usually I've got one tied around my neck. It's a little bit warm for it now, so maybe it'll go in my pocket. But that's really it for me. I don't wear too many accessories. I got a watch. And that's about it. But yeah, who's next? Kevin.
I don't really have too many accessories either. I've got a really simple kimono watch, which is like a Belgian brand. And I bought a natural veged hand leather strap for it, so I wear that every day. And I've got an Eternal Leather Goods armband, is that what you call it? You put around your wrist.
Cuff or a bracelet.
A bracelet, is that the word? Yeah.
So is it armband? I was thinking you're going swimming.
Is that what you call armbands?
Yeah.
So a bracelet it is then. Which again was a natural veg tan one, which is now very dark brown. So they've got some beautiful pattern on it, but that's it for me. Andy?
Yeah, for me, sunglasses-wise, it's a pair of Randolph Engineering aviators, which are the ones that the I think US Navy pilots used to wear a lot during kind of the Vietnam War era, and are still quite popular. Then it's got to be a Wild Frontier Goods belt and wallet. And then watch-wise, it's either a Chris Ward, which is a British brand that sell pretty much only direct. I've got a couple of theirs out, or if I'm feeling particularly fancy, it'll be the Breitling.
Cool. For me, I mentioned a couple bits. You know, I always wear a pair of black sunglasses. Usually, I like the shinier, the better. Although I've got some chrome Oakley frog skins and some neon green Oakley frog skins, so I need to get those out. Always carry a bandana in the back pocket, especially when I'm in Texas and it's hot as hell and you got to wipe the sweat off your forehead. That's a lifesaver. Love cuff or wristband. Like, this is cool. It's like a quarter leather brand copper wrist cuff that my sister bought me years ago. And then recently I got this Tanner Goods neon yellow wallet, which is a lot of fun. So I'm breaking that in. But yeah, I love accessories, and also usually have some sort of man bag from Filson or Jack Spade or something like that. Lex, anything you want to add?
Cool. Yeah, so as I mentioned, sunglasses. So I always wear vintage Ray-Ban Wayfarers, but always pre, I think it's about 97 when the Italians bought them and started making them in Italy, and they just weren't as good as the old made in America ones. Sorry to any Italian listeners, but it's true. And also, I would like to put a shout out in winter, pretty much live in my hat as anonymous hat. So thank you, Ilya, for that. There we go. Yeah, another shameless one. Plug. But yeah, that's, I think that's about it, really. That'll do.
I forgot to mention, I always carry, in jeans, I always have with me a vintage Wellington flip lighter in my coin pocket. It's from my great uncle, I think. He was a US Air Force or US Army Air Force military policeman based in the UK during World War II. So I always have that slotted down in my coin pocket.
But not in them scuba shorts.
There is no coin pocket in their scuba shorts. There is a coin purse, though.
On that note, coin pockets. Coin pockets are the jam for carrying small implements. Like, I'll usually throw my little tiny James Brand pocket knife in my coin pocket. They're definitely underutilized features.
I find the coin pocket usually digs into my hip, so I kind of usually avoid the coin pocket stuffing things in there. So I usually have a little pen knife, especially when I'm work. I actually do put coins in my coin pocket. That's probably the only thing I utilize it for.
I forgot about money. It's been so long since I've had cash. Cool. Well, I realize we're at the 2 hour mark. Does anyone want to do Q&A, or do you just want to wrap it up for here for today?
What about if we do like a 10-minute one?
All right. Maybe let's just quickly hit up the two questions that came over on Instagram last night. Then there was like one or two questions on our post that are episode specific. So to start it off, we've got from Buster the Human. Do you think style is innate or a mix of experience and taste?
The latter for me.
Yeah, a mix.
Yeah, I think style is so much shaped by your experiences.
But I think some people just have taste and a good style, and some people don't. And I think you can't fake it. And I would probably put myself slightly in a not particularly good style. Anytime I try and look really cool, I just, as I said before, I just end up looking scruffy. I think there's something slightly innate about it.
I think you can there is something innate about it, but I think you can teach oneself style as well, and taste, sorry. If you're exposed to, you know, those experiences, you can, and if you're taught these kind of things, I think you can start having appreciation for them, which can inform your decisions, whether it's, you know, furniture you go for, or, you know, watches, whatever. I think those kind of things you can learn, but there's always going to be someone who has an innate taste or innate sense of taste that will be able to pick out new things better than someone who doesn't have that.
I did see a post a day or two ago saying something to order of, like, due to Gen Z and kind of how creative they all are, that we're now living in like a post-style world where, like, you can basically wear whatever you want, and I don't know, maybe start thinking of like Fifth Element or something like that. So I think it'd be interesting to see how the kids take our styles in the future.
It is funny though that if you look around and look at the kids nowadays, they literally look like they're in the 90s. Like, it's at least that's the way it is here in Australia. So yeah, Lex fits right in. but even like,
don't change your style, and eventually it'll come round back to you. So that's just keep.
It's true. Even like the haircuts and stuff we had in the 90s coming back, like
razor.
Kids, why
razor
are you doing this?
me and Tom are just waiting for the farmer and the miner look to come back into.
one day I'll come back around, and then we'll be kings.
Cool. We've got one more question from yesterday's post from MXN Boots Boy. How do you know you found your style?
When you're comfortable in it.
Yeah. You keep going back to the same items or same type of items whenever you go shopping or you go looking. That's kind of when you know. It's not really a conscious thing. Wait.
I think like style for a lot of people will develop and change over time anyway. So.
Yeah,
I think if you stick too much to, I have got to get this and I've got to look like this, then you've probably not found your style. You know, you're kind of boxing yourself in too much. So, you know, just.
I think every style will have some kind of foundations within those.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
if you have found your style, you probably know, you know, your go-tos. So, you know, you're going to wear, you know, pair of jeans, you might throw on a Henley, you might wear a chambray shirt. Those things will always, you know, you can always wear them and be comfortable knowing that, you know, you're going to look good. So I think, yeah, it's just knowing those foundation pieces for yourself. And when you know those pieces, and I think at that point, then, you know, you've kind of found where you're going.
Yeah, I think I'd add that anytime your clothing makes you happy, you found your style, whether that be like, you want to buy something because you're excited about it and you want to wear it, and maybe you might look like an idiot to other people, but to you, it makes you happy. It's like, that's your style. Or anytime you put something on, you feel good. That's your style. It doesn't matter what it looks like. I think it's all about just how it makes you feel inside.
Like when I wear my overalls and my bulge is making everyone uncomfortable, but I feel happy.
Yep. Like
within
that.
Certain constraints.
Well, Andrew just left on that.
Yeah, he's like, nah, had disgusted. Enough of this.
Scared off by the bulge. Anybody else? All right, cool. Well, let's wrap up episode 11 here on Our Unique Styles. As I mentioned before, please rate or review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, please follow us on Instagram at Sons of Selvage Podcast. Of course, you could email us at sonsofselvagepodcast@gmail.com. And then one other addition too is, you know, we set up a Discord server for the podcast to talk about anything that we're into. So kick it with us or other social media podcasty folks. We've got some cool friends from the scene on there as well. Jump on our Discord server. We've got a link to it on our Instagram page. And everyone, thanks again, and hopefully see you next month for episode 12.